U.S. versus Israel, please, case number 5.
May it please the court. My name is Tom O'Malley, and I represent Rohi Israel, who was also formerly known as Jarvis Jefferson. Mr. Israel violated the terms of his supervised release by smoking marijuana, and the government then sought to revoke his supervised release. An evidentiary hearing was held, and Mr. Israel's position is that the government's enforcement of the terms and conditions of his supervised release, specifically that he not smoke marijuana, is violative of his rights under the First Amendment and the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the RFRA. Mr. Israel is a practicing Rastafarian, and in this case we have stipulated that Rastafarianism is among the religious groups sufficiently stable and distinctive to be identified as one of the existing religions in the United States, and is thus recognized as a religion within the meaning of the First Amendment and the RFRA.
But Mr. O'Malley, he converted to Rastafarianism while he was still in prison.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And as I understand it, from about 1996 or so, I'm not sure what the year was, but I take it that you have not disputed the fact that while in prison, there was a compelling government interest to support a prohibition of his smoking of marijuana all the time, or even any of the time, notwithstanding the fact that that's part of his religion.
Yes, Your Honor.
So why isn't it also, since what the district court judge did is he gave Mr. Israel the benefit of the doubt on the other aspects of this case, why isn't there a compelling interest on supervised release as well, given the monitoring issues, given the fact that he was procuring this marijuana illegally, and everything else?
Your Honor, the issue of whether or not his rights were violated while in prison has not been addressed. Certainly the court found, sua sponte, that there was a compelling government interest in restricting his use of marijuana while in prison.
And I'm just trying to say, if that, if we, now you can contest that if you want to, and that's fine with me too, but if we take as a baseline that the penological concerns inside the walls of a prison are enough to restrict access to marijuana for the Rastafarians, and for all I know, you know, wine for the Catholics or whatever, then why did the penological interests fall off so significantly while he's still in custody, albeit under supervised release?
Again, Your Honor, we have not addressed that.
Why isn't there a compelling interest then? You can just address that directly.
The compelling interest, the government argues that the compelling interest in prohibiting his use of marijuana while on supervised release is that it needs to uniformly enforce its drug laws, and that it has a compelling interest in the health and safety of prohibiting Israel from using marijuana.
But let's take this. How can he obtain marijuana in this country without committing a violation of a federal or state statute?
He cannot, Your Honor. He
so
would
he
have to grow
to,
it,
so,
and that
right.
would still
and
be
that
a
still
violation.
Violates the
yes,
law. Right. Right. We have these plant cases every so often.
Yes.
So. Definitely. So why isn't that actually a rather strong government interest? He's creating the market. He's helping.
It's a two-pronged question, Your Honor. I think, number one, is there a compelling government interest? And the second question
well,
would
but the government has determined that, haven't they?
Well, the government has argued it, Your Honor. However,
our government determined it by enacting that legislation.
It has enacted that legislation, Your Honor. However,
well, Just answer what I'm asking you. Haven't they determined then that it is a government interest by enacting that legislation?
I would say no, Your Honor.
Well, they have.
Let me ask you
something else.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do we have other violations of the law as well? Maintaining employment? And
yes.
Supporting his dependents?
Yes, Your Honor.
Those are also violations of
his
probation.
Yes.
And isn't it also a fact that he was excessively using marijuana?
I don't.
Not just to praise and to worship?
I think the court found, Your Honor, that his use of marijuana was consistent with his religious practice. The government certainly argued that his use was excessive,
right.
And certainly his THC levels were high. However,
right.
The court refrained.
Did he praise and worship for 24 hours a day
according
to get that level?
He would have to use a lot of marijuana, Your Honor, I believe,
right,
to accumulate
praise
that
and
level.
Worship all the,
yes, Your Honor.
All hours of the
you
day
know,
to get that level.
Mr. O'Malley,
yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Israel really seems like a poster boy for the social ills that are, you know, caused by the use of Schedule I controlled substances. By his own admission, his marijuana prevents him from working to support himself or to support his child. Will the record tell us if he's receiving public assistance?
I believe the record might not address that, Your Honor, and I don't think that he is at this time.
Will the record tell us if his child is receiving public assistance?
I don't think it does tell us that, Your Honor. However, I think the answer to that question is when his child was younger, he did receive public assistance. That's my belief, anyway, Your Honor. Your Honor, I think, though, that you've raised a point that should be addressed. Do we say, then, that nobody can practice Rastafarianism because of Rohi Israel? Is that where we're going with this? Because we'll say, okay, it's okay to believe in Rastafarianism.
Well, we take this case on its facts. This is not a person who goes to church twice a week and, you know, has a puff or two. This is a person who, by his own admission, smokes marijuana all day, every day.
Yes, Your Honor.
What if it were crack cocaine? Should that be allowed to?
I would say no, Your Honor, because what we
why not?
Because what we have stipulated is that marijuana is a sacramental rite in the Rastafarian religion.
And what if they said that crack cocaine was?
Well, then, if that was the case, Your Honor, and if we could
that should be allowed to.
If we could stipulate that that was a sufficiently stable religious practice to be recognized under the First Amendment, I would suggest that we would find it isn't.
See, I think the first hurdle that you've got to jump is, you know, is this kind of marijuana ingestion really part of Rastafarianism?
And we have stipulated that it is. In fact, Your Honor,
all day, every day.
The court found that that was consistent with the court below found that was consistent with his religious beliefs.
Yeah, but do you have to accept
that
the
amount?
Court's view of what's consistent with his religious, I mean,
isn't
that why we're here?
Well, Your Honor, I suppose that has not been briefed by either side since it was not appealed.
Now, wait, are you telling us that the court found that amount of marijuana per day?
Yes, it did, Your Honor.
He took it as a For the sake of argument, as I understand the district court's opinion, he was afraid, he says, any guesswork would result, this is on page 7 of his opinion, any guesswork would result in an administrative quagmire. This is thus, for purposes of this court's analysis, it will assume that Israel's usage is consistent with his religious practice. So I understand what you're saying, that as now coming to us, nobody was trying to develop a record on
it
that
is
point.
Hard to accept, Your Honor, when we look at it as a sacrament, it is hard to accept that Rastafarians use marijuana just as we look at Eucharist, just as we look at marriage or baptism.
No, that's not correct. That isn't true. Because the only thing that's difficult to accept is that any religion, I mean, Catholics don't sit around drinking, you know, the wine from the chalice from the moment they get up to the moment they go to
sleep. That is quite true, Your Honor.
Or, you know, crackers, you know, I'm sorry.
No, I
wafers.
Wafers from the morning
from the minute they get up to the moment they go to sleep. So it's not.
That's a ridiculous argument. Comparing those two, Lord, to baptism, that's ridiculous.
But it is a sacrament to them, Your Honor, and I think we found that.
Well, that I understand.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, you're brave. Good morning. Tina Nelme for the government. On a couple of the points that you raised with Mr. O'Malley, I would refer you to the government's brief, footnote 11 on page 14. We had some concern about the excessive use of marijuana by Mr. Israel. The government's position was that it wasn't consistent with his religious beliefs, or that it didn't, that the prohibition didn't substantially burden him because, as you pointed out, he was in prison and he was a practicing Rastafarian and he didn't smoke marijuana. There were times on supervised release when he didn't test positive for marijuana.
But the problem with that, I mean, that's why I think the district court moved to the compelling interest part of this test, because that doesn't mean he wasn't being burdened while he was in prison. It just means that under a whole host of cases I can think of, like Turner against Safley and others, the government certainly has a compelling interest in maintaining order within the prisons, and a big part of that, as we know, is control of drugs that might be going into the prison. They don't want everybody to convert to Rastafarianism, however genuinely they may be converting. But my concern is how we draw this line. I mean, suppose you have, you know, a Buddhist who says that it's important, you know, to withdraw from society and go meditate forever, and thus the person isn't supporting his dependents, and he isn't holding down a job, and he isn't doing the various other things. I can think of genuine religious practices that might leave somebody as useless to society as Mr. Israel seems to have been in his perpetual stoned condition. What's the test for a compelling interest? I would have said to you that if I looked at the race discrimination cases, for example, that's a really high bar, and I would have thought that the legislative history of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was trying to set a high bar, and I'm afraid it's kind of lower here somehow.
Well, I think because what we're talking about is marijuana, and it's a controlled one substance, I think that's where the distinction in this case is, as to your example there with a Buddhist who wants to just maybe stay within his house and neglect all his other duties and responsibilities. Mr. Israel, in this case, was smoking marijuana all day, every day. As you know, he was buying on the streets from other people, so he was, in fact, perpetuating the crime. Congress and the Supreme Court have made determinations that drugs are a menace to society and that it has a substantial and detrimental effect on the protection of the citizens.
Well, that's true, although, of course, there's a great deal of literature out there suggesting that the government has overreacted wildly to marijuana, at least vis-a-vis nicotine and alcohol and a number of other things that are hardly good for you that they don't do the same thing to. But maybe we can't take that into account.
Well, I think, and even the Supreme Court recently has determined that there's no medicinal value for marijuana.
They're not even letting the doctors find out if there's medicinal value, which is a problem. But
absolutely.
Yes,
they're not allowing the research to occur.
But let's say if Mr. Israel grew his own marijuana. Let's just say grew his own marijuana.
Right.
No selling, no nothing like that. Or used medical marijuana on one of the, you know, few tests that maybe NIH might be permitted to have. That would, of course, eliminate a major part of the government's argument, because there'd be no criminal activity involved in his obtaining, you know, the drugs. He's growing it on his windowsill, not bothering anyone. And the quality would be controlled to minimize any health risks.
That's right. Part of it. If you were growing it himself, you know that it's even the growing of marijuana is a violation. It may not be a federal offense because you don't have more than 100 plants, but it is a violation of the law. The problem you have is when he's doing it all day, every day, and he's driving. I mean, in this case,
right.
It was
and
the
if he's under the influence of marijuana, whether he is driving or not, he's violating the law.
And that was our concern. The probation officer, not only was he becoming belligerent, he was not coming to appointments, he wasn't honoring the rest of his commitments, he was abusing marijuana, and we didn't know how we were going to deal with him as a supervised releasee. It was very difficult for the probation department.
But he had other violations as well, truthfully.
He did. And the government's concern was the liability. Do we allow this a person who's on supervised release to continue to smoke marijuana? What if there's an accident when he's buying it and someone gets shot? Or what if on the way to driving to pick somebody up, he's in an accident and he's under the influence? I mean, the government has a potential liability there because there's the judge saying it's acceptable to do, and we've got someone injured on the other side of it. So that was a big concern of ours as well. I think also when you look at the fact that he is impaired and that he's perpetuating it, in addition to the fact that this is a Schedule I controlled substance, if you had a chance to look at that Federal Register, it is an excellent letter of denial for the request of the classification of marijuana from Schedule I to a Schedule II controlled substance. It goes into great detail from the Health and Human Services Secretary about the effects that it has, not only on Mr. Israel himself, but people around him, the community, emergency room, drug treatment, and it goes through all the different medical effects. I'm not a medical practitioner, but there certainly are many. So we're trying to even protect him from abusing it in that respect. I understand it's a religious tenement. I have a hard time equating it with communion. To me, that is not the same thing. But I understand that this belief, this religious belief, is such that they want to use marijuana. I think you can look at the compelling interest in the Middleton case, the Olson case, and the Rush case. And I think in all the cases, other than the Valray case that I've found, have all determined that there is a compelling government interest in precluding the use of marijuana.
And why a case on appeal, or was that ever appealed, the Western District of Washington?
Washington? I don't believe so. And it
was
an unpublished decision.
The Solicitor General just left it alone. No.
I was very surprised that it was out there
I'm
when I started doing the research
too.
On this case. But I tried to put ample evidence in front of the district court so that we wouldn't have the same decision that they had in Valray. And
well, it doesn't matter to us, I mean, because it's not binding on us, but it's curious to me if it wasn't appealed.
Yes, and it's out there. And that is a concern to the government as well. But in this case, it is our position that the district court did the right thing and that it was very thorough in its analysis and its conclusion and that it should be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Your Honors, if we assume arguendo that there is a compelling government interest in prohibiting Israel's use of marijuana, the government still hasn't met its burden. Under the RFRA, it is required to choose the least restrictive means of pursuing that interest. Your Honor, I would say that the total prohibition of the use of marijuana is not the least restrictive means. Certainly, there are other ways that Mr. Israel's abilities could be tested if we assume that he is a danger to society when he is somehow intoxicated or under the influence of marijuana.
Hasn't Mr. Israel shown that this really was the least restrictive way for him? He doesn't do this in moderation. He'll go to substance abuse clinics and then he'll drop out or he won't follow their directions or...
I don't know of any substance abuse clinics that he's gone to, Your Honor. I would concede that he has not done this in moderation in the past. But I think, for example, why would it be any great administrative burden, as the court found it would be a burden to choose another method? Why would it be a burden to give him the standard field sobriety tests that are given to any traffic?
24 hours a day?
No, when
so that he doesn't drive a car?
When he comes
so that he isn't walking around impaired?
Where
he could walk into the road in front of vehicles and cause accidents?
I think that, you know, he's escaped that injury so far, Your Honor, and I don't think that I don't think that he has ever caused any accidents or anything like that. I think he has shown up under the influence of marijuana. Yes, Your Honor.
Right. Thank you kindly for your help.
Thank you.
Thank you also for your help. We will proceed to case